Dear Lord Baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, Jesus, we thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. I just want to take time to say thank you for my family, my two beautiful, beautiful, handsome, striking sons, Walker and Texas Ranger, or TR, as we call them. And, of course, my red-hot smoking wife, Carly, who is a stone-cold fox, who, if you were to rate her ass on 100, it would easily be a 94. Also want to thank you for my best friend and teammate, Cal Naughton Jr., who's got my back no matter what.
Shake and bake.
Dear Lord Baby Jesus, we also thank you for my wife's father, Chip. We hope that you can use your baby Jesus powers to heal him and his horrible leg. And it smells terrible, and the dogs are always bothering with it. Dear tiny infant Jesus.
Hey, you know, sweetie, Jesus did grow up. You don't always have to call him baby. It's a bit odd and off-putting to pray to a baby.
Well, look, I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus or teenage Jesus or bearded Jesus or whoever you want.
You know what I want? I want you to do this grace good so that God will let us win tomorrow.
Dear tiny Jesus, your golden fleece diapers with your tiny little fat balled up fist pawing.
He was a man. He had a beard.
Look, I like the baby version the best. Do you hear me? I win the races and I get the money.
Ricky, finish the damn grace.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party too. Because I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
I like to think of Jesus like with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with like an angel band. And I'm in the front row and I'm hammered drunk.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, I stabbed a man in the heart.
I saw that. Brick killed a guy. Did you throw a trident?
Yeah, there were horses and a man on fire, and I killed a guy with a trident.
Brick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You should find yourself a safe house or a relative close by. Lay low for a while, because you're probably wanted for murder.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Yes, it is. Hey, how you doing? Bob and Elvis Show. Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania. Elvis Dingledean there in Nebraska. Uh-huh. Today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. Of course, we would be entirely remiss if we didn't discuss the big news of this week. And as you may or may not know, Monday night, Matt Roloff wanted to build a chicken coop on Amy Roloff's herb garden. Damn him.
What the fuck are you talking about?
That son of a bitch.
Is this midget thing again?
Yeah,
are these the midgets?
Little people, big world.
You keep talking about this imaginary midget show.
It was a very special episode. Matt Roloff wanted to build a chicken coop, but Amy Roloff had her herb garden all set up and ready to roll, and there was a sparks flew. Oh, and by the way, Matt Roloff also bought a colony of bees. I'm not making that up. He bought a colony of bees, and one flew up Amy Roloff's pant leg and stung her on the ass.
No, you're making all that up.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been in the news. That would have been the big news of the week if you weren't making all that up.
That's easily the biggest news of the week. Are you kidding me? Little people, big world.
I do not believe in that show.
Bees, chickens, herb gardens, Amy Roloff's ass getting stung.
No,
that is
making it all up.
That's American entertainment. That is the network that's bringing us the Sarah Palin show. And what you missed in the previous week, I mean, we didn't talk about this last week, but there was a sparks flew on the Roloff farm once again last week because a government employee was on the farm taking clandestine photographs because Matt Roloff purchased a life-size replica of Noah's Ark.
No, you're making this up.
I'm not making it up. That's
no little midget man on a farm buys a full-size Noah's Ark.
Yes, indeed he did.
It was 30 cubits by 50 cubits or whatever.
It was big. It was big, and it was falling apart. He's and so
making this, pulling this right out of your ass.
He and his boys went to this other place, like 2 hours away from the Roloff farm. There was an old barn, and inside of this old barn was a replica of Noah's Ark. Okay, and so what they had to do is they took a backhoe and all their giant heavy equipment and knocked down the barn all around the ark in order to get this son of a bitch out of there. And then they loaded it up on a flatbed and hauled it 2.5 hours back to Roloff Farms, set it up on a hill. Matt Roloff, I swear to God, wanted to put actual animals on it.
No.
Yes, indeed.
I'm not buying it. This, you're describing the season, the series finale of Carnival right now. Apocalyptic, it's the end of the world talk, and I won't listen to it.
So, of course, they're putting all this shit, they're festooning their farm with all of these attractions for their, you know, their pumpkin season, right? And Amy drives home and discovers a federal inspector taking, you know, with a disposable camera, taking photographs of the farm and the Noah's Ark replica. And she went, like, totally teabagger batshit on this federal worker and like insisted on having his name and was block. I mean, she's like body blocking the guy,
or I should say like,
yeah, like shin, maybe like shin blocking. And literally the guy, they all got all the way out to the guy's government vehicle. It was like a pickup truck with an emblem on the side.
Any of this.
Yeah. And the guy opened up the driver's side door and Amy launched herself into the car to obstruct the guy from, I'm not making any of this up, from driving away. Eventually got her card and, you know.
What government workers do they have in Oompa Loompa Land? Was he from Oompa Loompa City? From Oompa Loompa Town? The county seat of Oompa Loompa?
Oregon.
I don't believe. You need to stop talking about it because I don't believe any of this is true.
It's absolutely true. And
you're making it all up.
And it's a shame. You know what? I'm going to buy you the complete 5 seasons box set.
I dare you to.
Yeah.
Because you won't be able to, because there's no such thing.
There's going to be bonus features. Hilarious bloopers and outtakes on the box set. Actually, there are two big stories of this week. And the first one is, here's a great segue from, you know, the roll-offs. Yeah,
shameful.
To something that's actually quite serious, which is we lost Ted Sorensen this week.
Yes, did.
And, you know, he, of course, was special counsel to the president and President Kennedy and wrote some of the most memorable lines in all of political history for JFK.
Pretty much wrote Profiles in Courage.
And you provided me with the opportunity to actually meet the guy,
yes,
which
I
was
did.
Quite a tremendous privilege, and I will always appreciate that.
Well, it was a good trip, and I cannot believe we didn't take pictures. You always think there's going to be another chance, and we were headed up, what, Fifth Avenue or somewhere down there, and on our way to get something to eat, and I said, "Oh fuck, we forgot to get pictures," and you always think you got more time, but and yesterday I tweeted a picture of my BlackBerry with the last two emails I got from him, which, I mean, had to have been just hours before the stroke. So that's pretty, pretty awful.
Yeah.
So he will be missed. He's a good friend.
He's a good friend.
Very kind to me. He's very generous with his time for me and very kind to me. So I appreciated him very much.
And just a progressive to the very end. I mean, the conversation we had, we had this extended conversation with him in his apartment regarding, you know, a project that we're collectively working on. But we, you know, we got in a lot of politics, too. And it's just the guy is a steel trap. I mean, talk about a loss to simply having him around to advise our current president, future presidents, you know. But on the bright side, he was... in terms of writing, he was extraordinarily prolific. So I mean, all those ideas are committed to print. And so,
yeah, I highly, highly recommend that you go out to eBay or A Libris or any of these old out of print book, any place that sells out of print books and find a copy of his book, Why I'm a Democrat. It's a great, great primer on progressive ideology. It's a great book. Why I'm a Democrat. Go get that.
I was trying to think, of all of President Kennedy's famous addresses. I was trying to think of which one. And again, you know, all those memorable lines can be, I mean, maybe I'm speaking out of school here, but I mean, all the memorable lines that you think of when you associate Kennedy and his public speaking can be attributed mainly to Ted Sorensen. I'm trying to think of the one speech, the one address with the memorable lines that as a package kind of not only are my favorite, but kind of emblemize. Is that even a word?
That's not a word.
That's not a word. That kind of represent Ted Sorensen's talents and his ability to encapsulate an era. And I would have to say, personally, for me, it was the American University speech.
Oh, yeah. And that was his personal favorite. And I really in fact, one of those two emails that he sent me, the second one, was a follow-up. And it was something he told me many times, but he was just reminding me. If it's something about the project we were working on, and his second email was, oh, by the way, and let me remind you that he didn't subscribe to any one particular conspiracy theory surrounding JFK's assassination, but if he was going to give it a guess as far as motive, and you know, I'm a lone gunman, I'm a Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone guy. Mm. But as far as Ted was concerned, as far as motivation, he was pretty sure that it had everything to do with that speech. So the amount, in other words, that Kennedy was assassinated because of his push towards peace and his alarming, I mean, the American University speech read now, it's striking today, but then at the very height of the Cold War, after just going, you know, ass to elbow with Khrushchev over the Cuban Missile Crisis, and with Berlin still just a hot topic, for its time, it was extremely, I mean, talk about radically lefty, just unbelievable for its time. The amount of peace and anti-Cold War sentiment built into that. And so I think Ted, he alluded to it a little bit with me personally, when I was there with him before we all met there, about some of the guilt that he carried around about writing that speech. And it's just a fascinating, I mean, it is their relationship is just fascinating. I mean, someone should write an entire book just on their relationship. This Nebraska deferment. I mean, he put in for a conscientious objector status before he was even able, before he was 18, before he was, able to register for the draft. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Kennedy's a war hero, and fought his dad. I mean, Kennedy used his dad's power to get him a better posting in World War II. JFK was going to get a desk job, basically something nice and cushy, stateside, you know, in the Navy, maybe at Pearl Harbor, something rosy and not dangerous, and JFK pushed his dad to get him something, you know, to see a little action. These guys could not have been more different intellectually, religiously, socially, and yet they formed this unbelievable political partnership. It was just a remarkable relationship.
Yeah, and that's what one of the things I was struck by is how, you know, in an era where liberal is a bad word, and the word pacifist is even worse. Oh, yeah. I mean, Mr. Sorensen was not shy, at least in our conversation, in underscoring the fact that he's he's a proud pacifist.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact, you know, Jimmy Carter, when he was president-elect, tried to get put Ted's name forward for nomination to the to be head of the director of Central Intelligence, and was cooking along, and somebody found out that, you know, they went and they started vetting him, and they found out about this conscientious objector status, and they were furious with him. Why didn't you tell us? And he said, look, I didn't know it was the job of the CIA director to kill people. And he, you know, and Carter really pushed him under the bus, really just hung him out to dry. And Ted was very, very upset about that. And he wouldn't step down. I mean, he wouldn't take his name out until they had cleared his good name, until mm-hmm. they had stepped up and said that it was the administration. He wouldn't step down just because of that, because he was adamant. About I didn't know the CIA's job was to kill people, and that conscientious objectors yep. status shouldn't have anything to do with that. So he's just a remarkable guy, and just so just such a lovely guy, and you couldn't be in his presence without just being in awe.
Yeah,
I mean, even as small, as sort of shrunken physically as his stroke in 2001 had left him, and needing guidance, his eyes were, he was legally blind. Even with all that, you and I both kind of tower over him physically, but yet just in awe mm-hmm. of him. I mean, yep. you shake his hand and you think, how many times did that hand shake JFK's hand? You can't get around it. Just, oh my God. It was just the great honors of my life, mm-hmm. Probably unsurpassed to call him a friend.
Well, I think there's a lesson, for our generation in terms of liberalism, progressivism, in terms of how Mr. Sorensen carried himself. And he was proud of his liberalism, but he was always centered about it, never yeah. apologizing for it, never flailing about it, always thoughtful in terms of his approach to politics and approach to his own personal life, in terms of his work and his writings and his dealings, very yeah. pragmatic, very careful, very aware of the people around him. And that's one reason why I thought it was so amazing that we were able to, the Bob and Elvis show was able to walk into his apartment and sit down and for what must have been, 3 hours?
No, it was more than that. Yeah, I mean, with the sit down and then the talk. I mean, we talked for almost an hour just standing in the hallway there.
Yeah,
you guys talked with Gillian for a while, his lovely wife. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable that we had that kind of access.
So I have this clip of I hope I have it. This is I'm bringing this up on YouTube, so anything can happen. But I think I've got this clip from this this American University address, which is just it's emblazoned. I mean, if you go to the president's grave at Arlington Cemetery, this is one of the quotes that lines the. There's a sort of a marble retaining wall, sort of to the side of where the eternal flame is and everything. And this is one of the quotes that is on that wall. There we go.
So let us not be blind to our differences, but let us also direct attention to our common interests and the means by which those differences can be resolved. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
If you do not get chills when you hear that, you are soulless.
Yeah.
That is one of the great... I mean, and can you imagine any political leader today, much less the President of the United States, saying that about Muslim terrorists?
Right.
Or any of our say that about the Iranians, Ahmadinejad.
Yeah,
I mean the balls that it took to say it something.
It was enormously provocative, in the dangerous sense. But it was a dangerous time. It was just an unbelievably dangerous time, a fraught time, and for him to have the stones to go out and do that. Especially given the attitudes of the chiefs that he had to deal with back in Washington, the hawks, these guys that would literally have driven us into all out nuclear war during the Cuban thing, and for him to not very long afterwards get up and say those things was just remarkable. I mean, he absolutely was a profile in courage himself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you'll never get that kind of honesty out of a sitting president.
I mean, this was pre-Watergate. I think sometimes we forget what the American government was, what the United States was like pre-Watergate. I mean, we talk about, there are conspiracy theories flying all around, especially the last 10 years or so. But I mean, you want to talk about evil, evil sons of bitches. And I'm not talking about there was the Red Scare and everyone's afraid of communists. We're talking about raging imperialists. War hawks of the highest order at every level of power in the federal government.
On both sides. Hardliners. Khrushchev was fighting his own hardliners in Moscow. I mean, one of the great contributions to humanity that Ted had direct involvement in was talking Khrushchev down via that letter that he sent, that he and Bobby, went off. Here's a 34-year-old guy, Ted, just a kid. And he's in this room with Bobby Kennedy drafting a letter to the premier of the Soviet Union, begging him to, stare down his own chiefs, because there were hawks lined up. There were rumors of a coup d'etat. Yeah. It was just a nightmare. And they were on both sides, and they were just ready to rumble. And I mean, rumble, like go at it. Berlin was hanging in the balance. The chiefs were telling Kennedy, I was listening to a tape the other day where the chiefs were trying to convince Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis, during an XCOM meeting, that Russia wouldn't retaliate if we bombed the ass out of Cuba. If we went after those sites, they wouldn't retaliate. And Kennedy's like, "Are you fucking out of your mind? They'll go for Berlin in a split second." And they're, "Oh no, no, don't worry about that." It was in that same conversation where one of them said, "You're in a pretty bad fix, Mr. President." And Kennedy says, what was that? "Well, you're in a pretty bad fix." He's like, "Well, you're in there with me."
Yeah.
It's one of the great, one of the great lines. That line made it into 13 days.
Yep.
And it was right out of that. They changed the context a little bit, but that really happened. I mean, they were staring down the barrel. It was the 13 most dangerous days in human history. And Ted was right there in the middle of it.
I mean, there's one thing that also, I mean, if you really want a good education in terms of how politics were functioning, and especially foreign policy, I mean, the movie 13 Days is just one of those outstanding films. My only thing is I wish you could replace the Kevin Costner, Kenny O'Donnell character with Mr. Sorensen. I mean, that would make that film. But
they did a lot of that. One of Ted's big problems with that was that a lot of the things that the Kenny O'Donnell character did in that movie were really things that Ted had done or said. But they had to, centralize. From a writing standpoint, I understand why they had to do that. And it was Costner's little project there. So I just can't stand his accent.
It's terrible. Yeah.
But a great, great movie and huge kudos to the cast. Bruce Greenwood and that guy that played Bobby were just amazing.
I mean, we talk about 9/11 truth or conspiracies, which are absolute bullshit. And if you ever try to post a 9/11 truth or thing on the blog, it will be summarily deleted. That is one of my blog policies.
Oh, I can't be a 9/11 truther?
Yeah, no, sorry. But, however, I mean, there in 1962, there was a memorandum signed by Lemnitzer, in fact.
Yeah.
He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, for God's sake, for a plan called Operation Northwoods. Have you heard of this?
Yeah.
It was a plan to incite war with Cuba. It was a plan to create, remember the Maine type
false,
incident.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
False absolutely. Flag. Yeah.
False flag plot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were going to use, I mean, I've got some of the ideas here. They were going to start rumors. They were going to land friendly Cubans in uniform over the fence to stage attack on a base. They were going to start riots near a base. They were going to blow up ammunition inside a base, burn aircraft, lob mortar shells from outside of the base into the base, into their own base.
They were nuts about Cuba. I mean, Cuba, it was just, they could not... Bobby Kennedy especially, I mean, just had a huge bug up his ass about Cuba.
Yeah.
And to this day, I mean, it was the communist scare, just the threat of this little tiny island and this communist insurgency. It was just unbelievable, the disproportionate terror that this little asshole of an island, you know, produced in global politics is unbelievable. Yep.
Yep. I mean, this was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, you cannot even imagine something like that, especially a document like Operation Northwoods. Just go to Wikipedia, look up Operation Northwoods. It'll blow your mind. Because you can't even imagine something like that occurring now, or even any time in the post-Watergate era. But prior to Watergate,
JFK's assassination changed everything. Yeah. I mean, that's really when, you know, they say Watergate, but Watergate wouldn't have happened without JFK's assassination. Yeah. I mean, it just changed everything. It's when America really just lost hope. I mean, lost trust and it just changed everything.
Right.
And it was always so sad to see in interview after interview, everybody that would ever interview Ted would want to talk about that day in November. And it just the absolute pain and grief in his voice and in his face when it would come up, even 50 years later, you know, just punishing to think about. So it was really a loss. That, I mean, just you said it earlier, just the intellectual data bank that's lost now, you know, and it's just, I was thinking the other day, I was doing something in my head as I was doing the dishes for our project. I was thinking through something and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to ask Ted about how they would have gone about doing that. And then I thought, oh, you know, I can't. And then I'm thinking, where else am I going to get this information? Who else can I ask? There's no one else I can go to for that particular information in real time. I would have to Google it and it would be a hard thing to Google. So it really is just a loss to the world. So,
absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, the best thing I guess we can do is to, his life is in print at this point, and
I'm looking forward to. I mean, not that it's a good thing, but now that he's no longer with us, the JFK library will open up his papers and his archive online, which is got to be the biggest of all of them. I mean, there's just this huge storehouse of stuff, hundreds of boxes, and they won't open those things up until the person to whom they were assigned has passed on, and so now this huge treasure trove of JFK documentation will be open. So I got to get myself up there to check that stuff out.
I'm
serious. I want to spend like a month.
I was just gonna say that, right?
Yeah. Just buried in the Sorensen stacks.
It's crazy.
So, yeah. So, you'll be missed, Ted. We loved you.
Absolutely. And I guess in related hero news, did you hear about Don Geronimo? Was performing this stage show or something? Don Geronimo is now, formerly the Don and Mike show, he's now doing a show. No, he's not dead. But he was out in Sacramento. He's working at a station now in Sacramento. And he was doing a stage show and fell off the stage and landed on his head. I mean, point where he's going to need, like, physical therapy and things like that. I mean, he's, like, smashed his head open. And so he's in bad shape, too. So it's like, I mean, it's certainly not as serious or as important as Ted Sorensen. But, geez, Donnie.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I
bring Don up because he's, you know, much like Ted Sorensen, he was one of those, you know, sort of childhood heroes of mine. In fact, I do what I do because I grew up listening to Don Geronimo and the Don and Mike show and the WAVA Morning Zoo in Washington.
Yep.
And that was sort of the catalyst for me to get into, you know, entertainment and radio and all that crap. You know.
And you got to work for them for a while.
Yeah, and I got to drive Don Geronimo's car. I mean, that was insane. I got his super big gulps every day, his Diet Cherry Coke super big gulps, and his salads every damn day for about a year. That was fun.
And now he's fallen on his head.
And he fell on his head. So get well soon, Don.
Anyway, was there some kind of election this week?
Yeah, something went on the other day, like a couple days ago. It was a fucking disaster.
I didn't pay attention.
The show,
it's all good for us.
That's right, and the show goes on. Today's show, of course, brought to you by Bubble Genius, pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. Now, if you haven't taken a picture of your I Voted sticker, if you still have it jammed onto your jacket somewhere, take a picture of it, send it into Bubble Genius, email it to Bubble Genius, or you can email it to me if you want to. I mean, my email address is readily available in stores. And then I'll forward it to the Bubble Genius people. And then you get a free soap. And if you're a teabagger, literally, if you're lurking in the show, if you're trolling on the show right now, and you're a tea partier, if you're a wing nut, if you send a photo burning your Medicare card, you get free soap.
Well, they'll never do that.
That's true. No, of course they won't do that.
Literally, in Omaha, there was a guy running against another guy. There was a teabagger running against the establishment guy. And the commercial literally said, he voted, my opponent supported Obamacare and voted to cut Medicaid. I'm like, oh my God. People are so fucking stupid.
They are royally fucking stupid. Unbelievable. Well, we'll get into the ass backwards results of the election. But here's the Bubble Genius summary of what happened the other day.
Progress on the March. Brought to you by Bubble Genius. November 2nd, 2010. Special election edition. Christine O'Donnell loses her failed bid for the Delaware Senate. She is now applying for a job at a magic store at the mall. Goodbye, Christine! In California! Meg Whitman's dreams come true as she goes back to the halcyon days of California with Jerry Brown as governor. And here she is, signing up as a seller on eBay. Good luck with that campaign memorabilia, Meg. Mr. Rand Paul, the new senator from Kentucky. Economists are predicting a boom in wig sales. Not even in office yet and already helping the economy. This has been Progress on the March. Brought to you by Bubble Genius, fine vegan bath and body products. www.bubblegenius.com.
I don't know if Sarah Finowitz realizes what he has done.
He's started a trend.
www.bubblegenius.com. And the show is also brought to you today by Pomegranate Journeys at www.pomegranate.travel, the cure for the common vacation. Combining several of these, this is the ultimate travel company. I mean, you sign up with them and you ride your bicycle through the most scenic and beautiful parts of France and Italy. Food, wine, cycling, scenery, and, you know, if you're lucky, lots of, you know, wine. Additional, more wine is what I was going to say, right? Yeah, I was going to say something else. But this is a family show, isn't it? Visit Pomegranate's updated website at pomegranate.travel. See new trips and actually some hiking and photography trips in Italy's famous Cinque Terre. And brand new show with our friend Virgilio. Yeah, here we go.
Welcome to the Virgilio Show. I have my cousin Mercutio in the studio today, all the way from Pomegranate Journeys American headquarters. He flew in yesterday straight from the voting booth to play a little bit of music for you as a heartfelt thank you for supporting Pomegranate Journeys and making this season a complete success. As you know, Virgilio is a big fan of Bob and Elvis. They cut through the bull faster than Giacomo cutting through my garden on his way to the outhouse. Take that as your last warning, Giacomo. Anyway, Mercutio, show Bob and Elvis how much we appreciate what they do.
The Bob and Elvis Show. Fearless blow by blow will overthrow. Talk radio.
Pomegranate Journeys thanks Bob and Elvis for doing their damnedest this election to inform the good people of the USA.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Right.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
See, now, if you're going to get yourself a podcast, make sure you get yourself some sponsors who all they do on their commercials is praise you. I mean, that's talk about.
Yes.
We have the greatest sponsors in the history of all of radio and podcasting. Pomegranate Journeys at www.pomegranate.travel, a cure for the common vacation. Go check them out. Absolutely sign up for their newsletter. Go to their Facebook page. Follow them on Facebook. And follow them on Twitter at Planet Palm. Planet Palm is there. You can also find that stuff on my Twitter feed and sometimes on your Twitter feed. And as you heard, we had this election the other day. You remember? No. Seems like ages ago.
No attention to it whatsoever. I tried to watch some of the news and some of the and I just like fuck. No, fuck it. Can't pay any attention to it. Just every 2 year at midterms. Just historically, midterms are just a spasmodic, whinging, reactionary, fucking old white person hissy fit.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all it is. That's it.
Exactly right.
I don't give a shit about the midterms. All I care about is the guy in charge. So Congress can just eternally and forever go fuck itself.
Yeah. Well, that's what they'll be doing for the next 2 years. They'll be eternally fucking themselves.
Let them. Congratulations, reactionary, right-wing, old people, whitey, affluent, super conservative, old people. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Suck it. But here's why it's going to be good for us. And I've got some theories here, and I'm going to get it down because I'm already starting to get the wingnut told you so emails. I got one via Facebook the other day. Guy I went to high school with. He was my best friend in ninth grade. My best friend in the world.
I just got one myself. I just got one myself too.
We'll talk about that. I know you from Go Boy.
No, we'll get to that in a second. But I got another one just in my email just now. But go ahead.
Yeah, a big rub in the face because after 2008, I was predicting and I still do. We have seen the death of modern conservatism. I mean, conservatism. Read Sullivan any day of the week. He's constantly bemoaning the death. Of true conservatism. So that's not even an issue. This was not the midterms this week. It was not a return to classic Republican values and conservatism. They ran on a completely black president platform, right? I mean, there was every single talking head on TV that had a Republican candidate in their sights begged them to tell them what they would cut. Where they would find – how they would balance the budget without raising taxes. No one would tell them. So they ran on an absolutely policy-less platform, right?
Exactly.
So this is not a refutation of anything. It was just, black president, right?
Right.
So here's what I think – here's why I think this is good for us. The biggest gain by far, almost double every other gain that the Republicans picked up between 2006 and 2010 was in the independent column, all right? 16 points in the independent column Republican gain as far as from 2006 to 2010. That's who we have to worry about.
Yeah.
That was a huge gain for them. And this is what's going to happen. The crazy got refuted in the midterms. Fucking Engel out.
Yeah.
O'Donnell out.
Right.
Douchebag in Alaska out.
Yep.
All the nuts got refuted.
Paladino. Now,
Bet Paladino out. That's good for us because what's going to happen is the nuts, the crazies were the real Tea Party fanatics. That's where the base was, right? The Tea Party base. Now those people have nowhere to go except into the fray that did get elected. They're going to channel all that nuts into a 2012 push to drive out the moderates, right? So the next 2 years, things are going to get fucking insane. That crazy has got nowhere to go politically. They had their big fucking ridiculous orgasm over O'Donnell and Miller and Paladino and Engel, all the crazy. Now they got nowhere to put that. And the independents are going to sit back and watch for the next 2 years as the right, as Boehner and the people that did get elected are pushed unmercilessly to their own right.
Oh my God!
And they're going to get crazier and crazier, mm-hmm. and that's going to drive those, I would say, 10 of those 16 points in the independent column back to our side.
Exactly.
Because that's going to be the only place they have to go.
Yeah.
It's because that crazy. If some of the crazy, it's almost like you wanted a relief valve in there. Like maybe O'Donnell gets in there. Maybe Angle. Maybe somebody. And that to me is a huge. Fuck you. If they can't get rid of Harry Reid, who even we can't stand, right? Yeah. We would be like, eh, sorry, Harry, you were pretty much a douche. Mm-hmm. But if you kind of want a nutbag, a truly nut job Tea Party crazy person in there as a relief valve. So they have some place to channel all their politics, and that person could just stand on the floor of the house and just go, blah, 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 and you go, oh, yay, Tea Party, yay. But they got nothing. All their crazy got refuted.
Yeah.
So the ones that are there now are going to, just like McCain did in 2008, going to have to go so far to their own right to stay in power, that the nuts are out of the bag now, right? And those independents are going to come swarming back to us, especially as some of these things that Obama laid down in the last 2 years start to kick in.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. And I'm saying it here, and I can go back to it 2 years from now if I'm right, if I'm wrong, whatever. But I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that politically this is going to be very good for the president, because the contrast is going to be – yeah. I mean, the contrast is going to be hugely striking.
Yeah.
Between a Republican House of Representatives that are going to try to defund health care. They're going to try to just send the president and mainly over to the Senate, where it's not going to get taken up anyway.
Shit on it.
Yeah, it's just going to be these crazy, just crazy batshit pieces of legislation that will be deliberately off the wall. I mean, deliberately apeshit, because they don't want the president to sign any of it.
No. Yeah. And it'll be, the ape shit will be wrapped around like free diapers for impoverished babies. Right.
Yeah.
Boehner will come out with the free diapers for poverty people bill. And then wrapped in that, it'll be like, also you get a 10 pack of bullets with Obama's name on it.
Yeah.
With every diaper, you get some bullets, you get some Second Amendment remedies.
That's right. Like,
and then that when Obama shit cans it, and here's the business you and I ought to get into as entrepreneurs, we ought to get into the veto pin manufacturing business. We ought to start manufacturing commemorative veto pins. With a beautiful gold script on it that says Barack Obama, and then on the back you turn it and it says veto this, bitches, and it's just because he's going to be vetoing every fucking thing that comes to his desk.
Right.
We ought to get into the auto veto pen writing machine, like a machine that just vetoes bills like a robot.
Yeah.
We'll make a fortune.
Well,
because
that's
what they're going to do. That they can, in 2012, their commercials can say, Barack Obama vetoed a bill that gave free diapers to babies. Oh, fuck him.
Yeah. Right. I mean, yeah, and I would be just as gleeful as you are about it if I wasn't so fucking concerned about the fact that all of this is going to occur in a slow growth economy.
Nothing
is going to get done. They're not going to be able to get a damn thing done. I mean, all that's going to be done in the next 2 years is we're talking about, we're talking about utter gridlock in Washington. We're talking about, congressional investigations of the president's birth certificate. And I wouldn't be shocked if there was some sort of commies in the government kind of,
Well, let them. Like I said, let them. The more crazy, the better. I mean, the gridlock is.
Yes.
Gridlock is by default. We know that. We've had that to some extent, to the point of bill dilution to where we don't recognize it anymore. Right. We've had the gridlock. Now what I want is the batshit insanity, is the total crazy. Now, to your point, the one thing that Clinton always had, even when he was under, the most insane witch hunts in political history by Gingrich and the rest of those fascist fuckwads, at least he had the biggest post-war booming economy ever, to help him get over, right? Mm-hmm. So what we really need, and to my mind, we need super mega crazy to drive to 2012, because the thing that put LBJ over in 64 was the the absolute radicalism of the right wing. Goldwater represented this sort of shocking radicalism in conservative politics, and some of the things that Johnson was doing outside of, you know, trying not to get us into Vietnam, but while getting us into Vietnam, was, you know, the social, the great society and these things, people recognized that and wanted Johnson as a buffer against this sort of conservative insanity. Mm-hmm. That's what we need now. So I'm really going to be a cheerleader for batshit insanity, is what we need. We need a ton of it.
Well, yeah. And again, I hate to piss on your parade, but you and I are sitting here with regular income. I don't know if people who are unemployed right now and their unemployment benefits expiring and their COBRA gone fucking out the window, if they're as gleeful about the political show that's going to take place in Washington, because there's not going to be any more stimulus spending. There's not, nothing is going to happen. I mean, I don't even think
they're going to get that anyway.
They're not going
to get that anyway.
Well, there was a chance that there were going to be smaller spending bills passed if the Democrats still had controlled the House. I mean, I'm not talking about a big, you know, ARRA, you know, stimulus package that we had in the early 2009, but these smaller things, extensions of unemployment, extensions of COBRA, some infrastructure spending.
I think that horse had run its course.
Well, you know, I mean, again, sporadically and correctly timed, it could have still happened. And even within the budget, it could have happened. But, I mean, nothing is going to be allowed to get through. And I don't even think there's going to be a compromise on tax cuts. Because the Republicans, I swear to God, the Republicans will not allow this president to sign a single goddamn thing into law. Because as soon as he signs something into law, whether it's even if it's an extension of the Bush tax cuts entirely, he is going to be able to take credit for that in 2012, and they will not allow that. The Tea Party will not allow that. The Tea Party will not allow Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, the whole cadre of fuckfaces will never allow this president to stick a single pen to a single piece of legislation and say, look at what we did.
Just going to have to get clever and play the same game and be able to say in 2 years, you know, this is what, you know, we tried to save you. We tried to save X number of jobs and Republicans would let us. We tried to balance this and that and do this and that and Republicans wouldn't let us. I mean, they're going to have to get hardcore on the defensive.
That is true. And if I would love that if I was a little more confident in their ability to, you know, ballyhoo their own shit. And which
I still think Obama saw this coming the day he walked into the White House. I mean, the day he went out to make that speech in Chicago, I think he saw this coming. Mm-hmm. He saw this train coming, and I'm just hoping he's got a long-term plan.
Yeah.
To combat this shit, because they're really going by. It's like Die Hard. You know, they're going by the playbook, step by step. And I hope he's Hans Gruber and not the, you know, not the asshole out there with the you know, the principal from Breakfast Club. I hope he's not that guy.
Right. And as a student of politics, I look at something like Tuesday and I wonder, what the fuck are people thinking? I mean, because here's you and I. We're looking at objective reality. We're seeing, you know, a reduction of the deficit. We're seeing big middle class tax cuts. We're seeing all kinds of good things happen. The healthcare bill, on down the list. We all know the positive things, all of the accomplishments. But yet people who benefit most from that, people who are, I mean, oldsters, retirees who are on Social Security and Medicare voting against government-run health care. I mean, we know the contradiction. You wonder why they do that. And there was a great post up on Esquire written by Tim Heffernan is how his last name is written. I've never seen that last name before in my life. But he kind of analyzed the results of the election through the prism of Lee Atwater and Robert Novak, two of the wingnuttiest wingnuts of the last 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. And this is how these two describe it. And again, this is, you know, from Esquire. There's a scene in Boogeyman. I don't know if you've seen Boogeyman, the Lee
Atwater.
It's
on its way. In fact, it should be in my mailbox today, the Lee Atwater story.
The most
from Netflix. It should be on its way.
The most outstanding, one of the most outstanding political documentaries of our time. Just unfucking believable that this guy, I mean, what a – I mean, this guy was a fucking Wolverine of the highest order. I mean, he would just tear people apart and didn't give a shit about anything or anyone. But
died very ashamed of himself.
Right, right. And as far as – yeah, and the Southern strategy, I mean, he was – a perpetuator of that, and you know, and regretted all of it. I mean, when he was just really in the death throes of I think he had brain cancer.
Cancer, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, he repented, you know, and kind of regretted everything that he had done in politics.
And well, he should have. Yeah. I mean, absolutely, just a political abomination. And who is today one of his greatest proteges?
Karl Rove.
That fucking Karl Rove. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, his legacy lives on. So there's not enough mea culpas in the world to forgive fucking Karl Rove.
Right.
I mean, he is Lee Atwater times 10, I mean, to the nth power.
Well, in this Esquire piece, they describe this scene from Boogeyman, where Robert Novak says the difference between Democrats and Republicans, and this is so, so fucking dead on. The difference between Democrats and Republicans is that Democrats truly believe in governing.
Yeah.
And Republicans just want power.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's all about policy versus politics. Obama could have played this closer, could have played the last 2 years politically much safer, much closer to the vest, given away more, done this, done that, played the politics and not forced the Republicans to run so hard to the right and play all these, you know, ridiculous cards that they've had to play. But instead he went for the policy. And that's what, I mean, Clinton was the same way. Clinton was a policy wonk. He was absolutely a policy guy.
Yeah.
Democrats are just like that, which is why it's so hard for us to hold on to shit, because policy doesn't fit onto a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. You know, now they've, okay, so they won all these elections. Now what? What's the policy, Junior? Where's the policy at?
Yeah.
And we're not helping. I was watching Twitter yesterday, and all these fucking tweets going, oh, call John Boehner's office, ask him where the jobs are.
Hysterical. Yeah, right. That's going to do
douchebags.
All
douchebags. Are we really that? That's like a teacot thing to do.
Yeah.
That's like a Republican that, oh, call Obama, it's second day in office, ask him where the jobs are. Fuck off.
Yeah.
If I called Boehner's office, I'd go, hey, congratulations. Now do something. I would vote for you if you had a fucking plan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an ideologue. I mean, I haven't even been a liberal long enough to be an ideologue, if there even is such a thing, right? I'm a practical, pragmatic politician wonk. Like, I want there to be laws and regulations and things that work. That's all I want.
Yeah.
I don't want fucking welfare for everybody and a weak army. I'd like a safe, secure, prosperous America. I'd like to make a lot of fucking money. I mean, do something. If I'm calling Boehner's office, I'm not calling the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the next guy but two, to be president and make a little joke.
Yeah.
Come on, shape up.
Right.
You fucking liberal monkeys, you dumbasses. snark, snark, snark. Call him and congratulate him and ask him what you can fucking do to help him pass some laws that make sense. But that's not what they're about. Pisses me the fuck off how childish everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, and I'm not excusing I used to run a blog called Cluster Douche, for Christ's sake. And the day I stopped publishing that, the day that Obama got elected, right after I called you to congratulate you on election night, I went back and watched the speech and he's like, he's being dead serious, and he looks like Obama that night, that speech he made in Chicago, he looked just mortified, like, oh, fuck, I won. Oh, God. And he said, maybe it's time we stop being little children and put the snark and the sniping and the sarcasm aside. And I felt duly chastised. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. He's talking to me. My cluster douche should probably take a nap now. And I got serious. I got myself elected to my local Democratic Party, and you know, try to do things. And here yesterday, oh, call John Boehner's office, mock him, douchebags, douchebags.
Exactly.
You should all be chastened. Anybody listening to this that retweeted that, fuck you.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot to say about that too. And it's been a frustrating 48 hours. I mean, the first thing
it really has.
Let me do this. I get into the stories in terms of what exactly has occurred the last 48 hours with progressives, and it's been predictable, very predictable.
Yeah,
They're so happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Glenn Greenwald and his haircut.
Oh, yeah.
And Jane Hampshire and her ghost self, her zombie face. Fuck you guys. What are you doing?
I don't know.
It's not a game. Assholes.
Yeah, I've got a Glenn Greenwald thing. I've got a Lee Stranahan thing.
Fuck.
Yeah. Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius, www.bubblegenius.com. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. I forgot to mention this. Anytime, all the time, you go to Bubble Genius, you want to buy some stuff, get your holiday shopping done now while supplies last. Plus, you can enter a promo code, Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS, and get 15% off your entire order. Do it now. And don't forget, if you're a tea bagger, you get a free soap. Take a picture of yourself burning your Medicare card. I would love to read the entire email from Bubble Genius with regards to that, by the way. And don't forget that Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. They are a progressive business. Support your progressive businesses. I swear to God, if you don't, I'm going to smack you silly. Most of their packaging is recyclable. Even the shrink wrap protecting your soap. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses. I mean, this is funny shit. If you haven't gone to bubblegenius.com and seen some of their soaps and some of their bath and body products and some of their voodoo dolls, now's the time to go and check it out right before the holidays. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. Pure Products.
I can't take a shower anymore without thinking the word surfactants.
Surfactants, that's
every
right.
Every time I suds up, I'm thinking surfactants.
Fucking surfactants all over me. Fucking surfactants.
No, I use my Bubble Genius soap. I know there's no surfactants.
That's right. I was talking to someone the other day who was actually using the dog soap because it smells so lovely. I thought you would
that's
have something
useless.
To say
that's
about
useless
that.
That's useless on the Farm of Doom. I'm glad they sent it to me, but I'm sorry. Charlie goes outside for 30 seconds on the Farm of Doom.
But I'm talking someone using the dog soap on themselves, not their dog. So, I mean, that's the quality products that you can expect from Bubble Genius. So, Pure Products, Pure Genius, bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Indeed it is. So, it is Wednesday morning. I'm groggy, a little sleep deprived, a little hungover from Tuesday night, the election night. And the first thing out of the chute, I don't even have an opportunity to pour a cup of coffee. I'm already arguing with Glenn Greenwald on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh my God.
He loves to hang you. He loves to dig at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, you're the world's biggest Obama cheerleader.
That's right. I'm an Obama lover, which is, you know, to me, that was the end of my respect for Glenn Greenwald right there. When he started referring to pragmatists, progressives who give the president the benefit of the doubt as Obama lovers. And I don't think it was intentional, but, you know, it just seemed a little too close to the edge of that sort of racial epithet that ends in lovers. So. Mm. But nevertheless, so I got into it with Glenn Greenwald, but even prior to that, and you know, Glenn Greenwald says something to the effect of, "Is there any policy that Obama passes that you won't endorse or that you won't support?" You know, and I don't know. It was some bullshit about how I expect the president to govern by polls, and then he gives me a poll that was about the Prop 19 in California. He was his thing was. Why did the White House come out in against Prop 19 or happy that Prop 19 failed? And I responded because it's irresistible, because it's such a stupid fucking thing to ask. Yeah. Why would any modern president who wasn't interested in political suicide support Prop 19? Now I support Prop 19. I think Prop 19, I think marijuana ought to be legalized. But
you know my feelings.
But nevertheless, you cannot be a modern president in the year 2010 after just taking a political beating and come out in support of marijuana legalization.
And be black.
Exactly.
Sorry. When I went to that Sarah Palin rally in 2008 in Omaha, I was standing behind a white suburban, you know, the just the fucking couple, this just this obviously religious, and across the street, while we there's this long line to get in to see the crazy, and across the street were. And here I am standing in the Palin line, and I'm having to act like I'm just chuckling at this this Obama rally across the street, holding signs, yes, we can, being very cordial, being very polite, but, you know, yes, we can. And so I have to listen to this couple ahead of me, and this woman, under her breath, says, yes, we can have more abortions, yes, we can smoke marijuana, right? Racist. I was just, yeah. I was like, I wanted to, I so wanted to get into it with her. And mm-hmm. They brought their kid. He's probably 10, son. And he's like, what's abortion? He starts asking, what's abortion? What's that mean? And I'm like, oh God, I want to listen to this. Like, I want to sit down, put him on my knee and look up with the big cat eyes and go, yeah, mom, what's, tell us about abortion. It's funny that you've got a son, so it doesn't matter to you. At this stage of life, but that's no pragmatic president can. Maybe he shouldn't have said anything about it, but then you know, then you buy a whole different plate of shit to eat if you don't say anything about it. So yeah, you can't come out in support of legalization. Prohibition of any kind is fucking ludicrous. We can mm-hmm. have a whole show about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But Greenwald is just a progressive concern troll.
Yeah.
Oh, why is he doing that? Oh,
yeah, and then, you know, and then the utter disconnect with reality was shocking to me. The utter disconnect with political reality specifically was that, you know, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen now. It's fine for Glenn Greenwald to come out publicly in support of Prop 19 or even local politicians. But the President of the United States cannot do that. It is just impossible. And as you said, the first black president certainly cannot do that.
There's absolutely no upside to it.
Why even bring it up other than to just take fucking pot shots? Because you're fucking
Well, let me asterize this. Let me footnote this by saying that I respect the hell out of his watchdogness over, you know, rendition and fucking torture and, you know, black sites and all the stuff he does about, you know, the human rights stuff about the war and blah, blah, blah. I got no problem with that.
Right.
Somebody's got to be hanging the administration out on that stuff. But when you got nothing to report on that side, or you're just bored with that or whatever the hell, you just got so many cycles that you can bitch about everything, that, you know, Prop 19, that's really not the story of the day.
Glenn. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I respect the hell out of him for many things, but not everything.
I don't. I don't. I mean, yeah, okay, he fights the good fight on several very important issues.
Yeah.
But then he douches it all up. And yeah. I Wednesday morning was it for me on the Glenn Greenwald train. I jumped right off of that boxcar. Because, you know, look, you can do the greatest work in the world, but if you're a douche about it, fuck off.
Yeah.
All right. And speaking of douches.
my favorite progressive.
Our favorite progressive.
Favorite progressive.
And this is.
He lives in the back of his car. He's my.
Keep going. Hey,
I'm singing my favorite Martian theme song. Remember that show?
Yeah, yeah.
They're my favorite Martians.
Oh, I was expecting. Yeah, there's so much more material that you could insert into those lyrics.
Oh, yes, but let's not start another flame war between. Like, he's even listening to this.
Yeah,
so fuck
he
you.
He doesn't give a shit. Yeah, he is. Of course he is.
He's not.
He is in his car.
His Portuguese assistant that he outsources for $3 a day. He's got her listening and typing up a transcript.
Yeah.
Because she's proficient at Microsoft Word. It said that on her on her web-based bio.
We're talking about Lee Stranahan here, and I got I did a show with him for a while. A couple of years ago, and just lost my mind there for a while, and stopped doing it because I got tired of smacking my face against a brick wall made of razor blades. It was insufferable to do that anymore.
And he's always hated my ass. So
yeah, that's true. He's blocked you in every way.
He
blockable.
Blocked me, and he That's just a long story, but he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah. So Tuesday night, you know, the election's not even over yet, right? They're still, you know, Chuck Todd is still revving along, and everyone's cranking on TV, and I'm still trying desperately to make my fingers connect with a keyboard. And I get this tweet from Lee Stranahan, who I haven't heard from in a long, long time, because I stopped following him on Twitter, of course, because what would happen is he would tweet something, and then it would be irresistible to respond, and then it would turn, like, 5 hours later, we're still going back and forth. So he tweets, "Hey, Bob Seska, go. Are you ready to admit that Obama ain't got this?" And you know, you remember that it's a specific reference to that graphic that
chill
says,
the fuck out,
"Chill the fuck out, I got this."
Yeah.
And so, are you ready to admit that Obama ain't got this? Every place he campaigned, Democrats lost. Right. There's a correlation there. Even if it was true. Yeah, Lee, there's a correlation there. Okay. Yeah, I'm really buying that. Yeah. You know, because you yanked it out of your ass. All right.
Yeah.
Or is that my fault? He says. Every place Obama campaigned, Democrats lost. Or is that my fault? Yeah, Lee, it's about you. It's about you and your douchey opinions with regards to Rahm Emanuel and healthcare and single payer. All right. And, oh, by the way, Ron Johnson's going to be a great vote in favor of single payer. I just want to pass that along. You know, in lieu of Russ Feingold, who actually would have voted for it. Yeah, progressive enthusiasm. Thank you. And then I write back to Lee and I said, "Wow, some things never change." Of course they don't. You know, this is exactly what this is exactly why I stopped doing a podcast with him. This is exactly why I stopped corresponding with him online. And this is exactly why he doesn't contribute to the blog anymore. If you remember, he actually did that too.
Oh God. Yeah.
I said, "Wow, some things never change. Say maybe Ron," here's the same comment I just made. "Say maybe Ron Johnson will vote for single payer." And then he responds, "It's not my strategy that lost here."
Because
it's all about him. It's all about him. It's all about
because him. his strategy would have got it would have been so much better.
Yeah.
Just the insanity of the progressive of the firebagger strategy to go full progressive in a political environment where the president isn't even legitimate enough to be president. You know, mm-hmm. that makes perfect sense.
Right.
And we've had this conversation over and over again about the progressive, the fantasy world that progressive, that hardcore firebagger progressives live in,
yeah.
Politically, that they think that anything they think is possible politically.
Well, you talk about a disconnect from political reality. I mean, what it came down to with me and Stranahan on that old Blog Talk Radio show was every fucking week, I swear to God, any of you who actually listened to that show knows this, that every week I had to explain to him that no health care reform bill gets out of the Senate unless it goes through Max Baucus. That was fact. It has to. If it has anything to do with Social Security, which it did, if it had anything to do with Medicare, which it did, it had to go through Max Baucus. This wasn't a choice. Barack Obama didn't get inaugurated and say, "Oh, let me go blow Max Baucus because I just like to."
Right.
This is the political reality of healthcare reform. And all Stranahan would do, I would explain that to him. This is Senate process. It has to happen. There is no way around it unless we suddenly decide to change the rules, which won't happen.
Right.
And he would say, "Well, why is he kissing up to Max Baucus?" I mean, it was like this. It was like this endless loop. And I would say, "Because he has to." And Lee would go, "Right. Well, why is he doing it?" "Because he has to." "Well, why? Right. Why? I don't understand."
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel just loves Max Baucus. So, oh my God. Oh, here you go. Like David Axelrod is taking money from health insurance company X, and Max Baucus is there behind the scenes, and he's shoving cash into David Axelrod's pants at a strip club.
Right.
And you know, it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, complete disconnect with practical reality.
Right, right.
Yeah. But at least you get to rub, rub your nose in it.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. I was really expecting the "I told you so" from Lee Stranahan. And it wasn't even "I told you so," because nothing he said had anything to do with the reality of why people voted the way they voted. It wasn't because people didn't vote this way because the Democrats weren't progressive enough. It's like voters don't go into a voting booth and go, "You know what? Those Democrats, they weren't liberal enough. So I'm voting for the wingnut."
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, you want to talk about, you want to highlight an example of being utterly disconnected with reality. That's it. Mm-hmm. So, but there you go.
And he's ass wrong. If he really did say every single one that Obama campaigned for lost, he's ass wrong about that. He did 19 specific political rallies and 69 fundraisers. And of those, five are still too close to call. He had six wins and seven losses. So he was five or too close still. Or this was yesterday at 11 o'clock. So I don't know what the current tally is, but he won six of the ones he campaigned for. Six of them won. So fuck off.
I mean, I think both the president and the vice president were in Delaware campaigning for Chris Coons. Chris Coons won easily. I mean, it was a 17-20 point margin.
18 points, I think. 16, 17 points. But of course, O'Donnell said, "Well, we should have lost by 30." So win.
So, but that's
God loves you, Christine.
Exactly, and so you know, you get this horseshit line from Stranahan and his, you know, his 20,000 followers on Twitter all going, "Yeah, you're right, Lee. You're so right." Exactly.
Yeah, I unfriend people if I'm following tweeters and they retweet his ass, they get unfollowed. I won't put up.
That's so great. So you're actually researching anyone who follows you. You just go and check and make sure they're not following Lee at the same time. And if they are, man, fuck them.
But if they retweet any of his bullshit,
there you go.
I got my tweet deck, and if anything, the RT at Stranahan. Oh, you're done.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Click.
Brilliant. Just brilliant.
My my guy got teabagged in the election. I found out it's like 50, pretty close, but the frat boy that was my local representative got teabagged, so Nebraska slipped even deeper into the red.
Yeah, I saw that. I was looking at, and speaking of red, I mean, this is something that I don't necessarily monitor, but maybe you've monitored it, or someone listening in has monitored it. Has Hannity looked at the electoral map and goes, "Look at all that red! Look at all that red! Look at all that red all over the place."
Red, red, red.
Red, red, red. Look at Wyoming. Look how red it is. Well, fuck you. It's because there's only one congressional district, dick.
Yeah, there's like four voters.
Yeah, there's four people in Wyoming.
It's a rotten borough.
Right. Oh, man. Oh, and you know what? We didn't get to... Oh, God. You know, we're out of time, and I wanted to play the Sarah Palin Corrupt Bastards tape.
Corrupt bastards.
Corrupt bastards. They're bastard people.
She's just got a filthy mouth. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What a sailor's mouth she's got in private.
Oh, yeah. And they've kind of confirmed that, haven't they? Wasn't that in that... I think it was that Vanity Fair piece?
Every other tweet in the last couple weeks is crap this and crap that. Now, bastard, pretty soon she's just going to be dropping the F-bomb. Or maybe the N-bomb. That would be a good one.
Yeah. I'm waiting for that one.
That would be the end of her. And yeah, next week we really have to talk about, you know, Kingmaker Sarah really ate a giant shit sandwich in Alaska there. So
yeah, and thanks for letting us keep the Senate there, Sarah.
Yeah, that helped.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
And it is. It really is.
Here's the tape of Sarah Palin saying bastard.
You're bastard people.
Right?
They're bastard people.
Oh, man. And then Rush Limbaugh saying about Nancy Pelosi, the witch is dead. These are good people. These are classy people. And they're running the House of Representatives now.
Yep.
Good luck with that, voters. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And by thank, I mean something different. But in all seriousness, thanks for listening.
Yes.
Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We will be back next week, as always. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, bastards!